video show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio. Welcome to this morning's show. So I have a kind of a funny story to tell you. I was driving Dave Champion's new vehicle back to Pahrump from Arizona yesterday. So I'm going to incriminate myself on something here. One of the things that Arizona has really gotten big into, the Arizona Highway Patrol, is this photo radar. And if you've ever done any research on photo radar, the legality of it is highly questionable. In fact, in a lot of areas, it's not even really questionable. It's just downright, you cannot get away with photo radar. So oftentimes, when I drive to Arizona and back, and I get hit by this photo radar. It's set for like, I don't know, 8 or 9 miles an hour over. That's the level of enforcement is what they call it. You can get away with 7 or 8 miles an hour over on the level of enforcement in most areas. So the first time I got hit with this was, I don't know, maybe about a year or so ago, and I wasn't sure what to do. So I looked it up, and I found out that in order for a ticket to be legal, first of all, you have to be served by a human being, either a law enforcement officer involved with that particular agency, department, whatever, or an officer of the court. Okay, so somebody from the court in which would adjudicate, which would hear your trial, as it were, your case in court. So, with that being said, I also found out that if you end up getting one of these tickets, it comes in the mail, shows a picture of the front of the car, shows a picture of you, the driver, very clearly, and shows a picture of the plate, and it says, now, if this isn't you, if you're not the driver, then who was a driver? What's her name? Address? Where? Blah, blah, blah. How do we get a hold of them to make them pay this fine? All it is a way to make money. That's all. And the company that operates this particular, racket, they're a private company and they lease their equipment. Actually, I guess it's kind of a co-op, kind of a partnership with the, Highway Patrol in Arizona, where they get a piece of the action of all the different tickets that are written. So Highway Patrol is not out any officers. Matter of fact, they can redeploy them elsewhere if all they really do is watch a place for tickets and don't really worry about accidents. And that frees them up to go do other things, have a taller, longer, hotter, warmer coffee. Or it, anyhow, whatever the issues with the deal are. What I end up doing, because my address goes to a P.O. box, so they can't serve me. If they mail it to you and you don't get it, then they can send somebody to your house and serve you for the ticket. So I just throw them away. That's all I do. So yesterday, as I'm driving this vehicle back, it's got a dealer plate on it. It doesn't have any sort of identifying mark. It just happens to have a Ford dealer's plate on there. So I see this little sign about a half mile in advance. It says photo radar area. So I'm thinking, great, this is awesome. So what I do is I put the sun visor down. I'm peeking through the edge of the sun visor so I can see the road. Put up the appropriate hello issue with my hand and end up speeding up to about 15 miles an hour over the limit to make sure the little flashy thing activates. That's the way I roll. I hope they enjoy that one. So, anyhow, folks, stay tuned. Be right back right after the break.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back, guys. So, that was one of the things I was looking forward to. Now, I actually passed by several different photo radars in my long trip through the great state of Arizona. However, there was too much traffic to be able to get up to speed to be able to actually get hit by one of these things. So I had this plan. As it turns out, it was the very last photo radar before I left the state that I was able to perpetrate that on. And That's just kind of the smart ass I am. Basically, take that. If you guys actually want to go out and do something, first of all, I would, if you have an interest in hearing Dave Champion's spin on radar enforcement and minor traffic things like that, his view, listen to his show from, last Tuesday. This last Tuesday on the, what was Tuesday? The 1st? Is that correct? 3rd? 2nd? 1st? Yeah. So go listen to go to daychampionshow.com and look at it, or go to the RBN, archives. Listen to his, December 1st, broadcast, and you will probably appreciate that, which is one of the things that inspired me to, handle Arizona Photo Radar the way that I did. Just ridiculous. Plus, here's the other thing. You're allowed to face your accuser in court. So what are they going to do? Bring in a computer, which is attached to a camera mounted in a vehicle, and drive that into court? What is this? Like a court like on the movie Cars? We're going to have Mater in there as your appointed defense attorney? Sally's going to be the prosecutor? I just don't get it. So anyhow, we're all done with that. Now, yesterday we went through a lot of stuff dealing with ammunition. Some to do with a little bit of hand loading, some of the things and dangers to look for, and also on how to store your ammo. So I want you to keep in mind a couple of things. Some people have a thought to take and maybe bury their ammo, put it in a place that's very, very difficult to get to. As in, if you can't get to your ammo within a few minutes, it's probably stored a little too far away. So I just wanted to give that up to you. If it takes more than a few minutes to get to your ammo, it's stored too far away. Like if you've got it buried in an underground bunker in your backyard, well, then you've got to have it to where your backyard can sustain for however long it's going to take you to get to that ammo in that buried underground bunker. You're going to have to be able to have your home in an area and in a place and an environment to where if something goes down, from the moment you realize it, you've got enough time to get to it, get it ready, and get that ammunition deployed. So I want you to be aware of that. You can't have it so deep, so dark, so far that it is unusable. Or at least you've got plenty to last you until you can get to it, or last you while someone else gets to it. So I just wanted to give you a little extra 2 or 3 cents on that. I have a very, very busy day today. One of the things I'm really looking forward to is I have a neighbor who has a single barrel shotgun that was his grandfather's, passed to his father, and his father passed it to him. His intent is to pass it to his son in a few years. So this is somewhat of it'll officially be an heirloom, I think. When he passes it to his son, it becomes a fourth generation shotgun. And unfortunately, my neighbor ended up falling off of his ATV and catching his fall with the buttstock of this shotgun or something like that. There's something to do with that story. The buttstock ended up just cracking apart. And, you know, it's typical walnut. So whenever he has a gun-related issue, first thing he does, come knocks on my door. Hey, man, you know, can you help me out with this? So I look at this shotgun, I look at the stock, and I said, you know, I happen to know a guy that can do this. He's not a stock manufacturer per se, but he's a professional woodworker. He made me a stock once before, and it was beyond expectation. And you know, he charged for this particular stock. He charged $250 or $300, about $250 for this stock. So I mean, it wasn't cheap, but it wasn't overly expensive. So what happened was, I have a friend who retired from Las Vegas Metro, probably about 4 years ago now, and he shoots Uzi competitions. So I wanted to get him a stock for his Uzi. Yes, it is a full auto Uzi. He has a class 3 stamp on it. He's good to go. It's all legal. As a matter of fact, he got this Uzi for a song about 10 or 15 years ago from a guy who was really hurt, and he got it for $1,000, including many, many magazines for it. And it's in wonderful shape. So anyhow, I wanted to get a stock that really, really stood out. So this guy was able to dig up a piece of purple heartwood, which, if you haven't seen it, it is purple and blue grains. It was basically purplish wood with bluish grains in it and more violet colors. It's incredible wood. It's the only wood in the world that I know of that actually grows purple. So I gave him a just a standard blank wooden Uzi stock. He took all the measurements off of that, and then I took it in, and I had a laser inscription done on it. All of the parts that attached to it I had done in a satin nickel finish. It looks similar to chrome, only it's more of a brushed chrome look. And nickel is resistant to any sort of scratches or anything. I actually had a pistol which had nickel plating on part of the finish on the slide. And if I was ever to go with a finish on a gun, I would probably go with the satin nickel again if it was like a more of a brighter, whiter, metallic sort of finish, because it is so resistant to any sort of scratches or wear. It's wonderful. Anyhow, then I took it back to the guy with the stock. He shot the thing with a nice satin finish over it, satin urethane, and it fit perfectly. I mean, it was just a fantastic job. So I take this shotgun stock to this guy, and he's not the fastest guy in the world. I mean, he mainly does furniture and cabinetry. That's his deal. But when he has a few minutes, he will sit down and work on the stock a little bit. So my not pushing him for time, he doesn't push me for extra money when it comes to these things. So he did this stock. I took the action down there. We fitted it up. He had to do just a couple of little things to it. He shot the stock with a finish. It's ready. My neighbor gave me a few bucks last night, so I'm going to go down there and pay for this thing and pick it up and reassemble this gun. The only thing is there's a forend on it. The main stock that came with this gun was the original walnut stock. And somebody had, it looks like they took a drill press and drilled in about 1/16th of an inch all over in like a honeycomb sort of a fashion throughout the stock and the forend. And I would imagine that was for some sort of grip or something. It didn't look patterned enough to be anything stock. And I think the gun is like a Sears. So whoever made single barrel, single shot, 12 gauge shotguns for Sears back in the 30s or 40s, whoever this may have been, must be the manufacturer. But it looks like the stock was somebody just decided to just hold this thing up. I don't think that gun's really worth anything, but not monetarily, but being as it's about to be a family heirloom, it is. So anyhow, having been provided all this information, the stock maker, the woodworker guy, Art, he ended up taking the stock and grabbed an absolutely beautifully grained piece of walnut. And I'm talking just gorgeous. He had to glue the two pieces. What he wanted was one side what had gorgeous stock, and the other side, the grains weren't quite as nice. So he split it down the middle and actually found that the middle had beautiful beautiful grain as well. So he turned it around and then glued it together. So the grains on this thing are really beautiful on both sides, especially on the right side. So for a right-handed shooter, if you're looking at the gun, it's just absolutely gorgeous. Anyhow, I get to go pick that up today and then reassemble this gun for my neighbor. And I asked him if he wanted to get the forend done as well. He goes, it's not that big a deal. I don't want to throw that much money on it. But I tell you, once he sees the buttstock on this gun, I'm imagining he's probably going to say, yeah, let's do the forend too, because the forend's actually very small. And I know the stock maker could do that thing pretty quickly, probably within a week or so. It's a very simple part. And then I am torn because it has just a tiny little bit of area where it's beginning to show just hints of what could be surface rust. So I recommended that he actually get the thing refinished. I don't know. But once he sees the stock on there, maybe he'll do that. Maybe even in this economy, he'll throw another $300 or $400 into the gun and get the forend done and then get the thing refinished. It's originally just blued, and bluing isn't really that great when it comes to keeping rust away, because you actually use salts in the bluing process, and you have to be careful if you get a gun re-blued, because if all the salts are not taken away completely through, say, an acid bath of sorts, that gun can rust quite a bit. So people have, in the last decade or two, have really started to get away from the bluing and gotten into many other processes. I would probably recommend if we could get a diamond black finish put on this gun, it would be the last finish it would ever need if the gun lasted another 200 or 300 years. So anyhow, just kind of a little story there. I'm really looking forward to getting this stock and putting it onto this gun. It is gorgeous. One of the guys that I used to work with, one of the very higher-ups out at Front Sight, every gun that he ended up with, what he liked to do was have the thing done in a hard chromed finish and then a black synthetic stock. And we're talking every gun. He was given a gun by Colonel Jeff Cooper and as a gift years ago. So, you know, to hell with the bluey and the wood stock, he sent the thing in and got the thing hard chromed and put a black synthetic stock on it, put a scope on it, got the thing totally ready, and then set it up as a presentation piece. Got a pre-64 model 7308. To hell with the bluing, to hell with the wood stock, hard chrome finish, and black synthetic stocks. Anyhow, he's got the guns that he likes, so anyhow, just kind of interesting. So, all right, guys, there's more to come. Stay tuned. I will quit yakking, and we'll go to commercial. We'll be back in a few minutes. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys, welcome back. So, even though I'm really looking forward to getting this talk, I have a very busy day today going on. Another thing that I have is I've been doing some private shotgun training with a client in Las Vegas. There's an outdoor range that we meet at, and we do some shotgun training. I got to tell you, shotgun training on paper targets is really sorry because they get blown to hell in absolutely no time whatsoever. So I'm actually on the hunt today. We're going to do some more training tomorrow. I'm on the hunt today for some steel to be able to use with shotguns. And I got to tell you, when it comes to shotguns and steel, it's probably the easiest thing to look for. You don't necessarily have to have a hardened ballistic AR-500 half-inch piece of steel because the vast majority of shotgun training is done with birdshot just to be able to run the gun and get used to things. You'll also end up loading in some buck. You'll do some slug work. Slug work is best done on the paper targets. You can see where it's going. And quite honestly, if you shoot slugs at steel, you have to be at least 75 to 100 yards away because those slugs will go straight in, deform, and come straight back. We're talking almost very, very similar to the line that you fire it. It has the ability to come back. On more than one occasion, I have seen people get hit, like in the lower leg or brushed across the ear with the slug that came back at them, even at 35 yards. So shooting slugs at steel, anything closer than 75 yards is a pretty bad deal. So slugs are best done on paper. But birdshot, and I'm talking, you know, between 6.5, 7, 7.5, number 8 birdshot, stuff like that, really isn't any big deal to most pieces of steel. It's soft lead. It is small lead. There's not much energy behind all of it because it is such a small, lightweight pellet that each individual pellet doesn't have much behind it. So even a reasonable piece of steel that's probably at least a quarter to three-eighths of an inch thick, it does not need to be hardened, is pretty reasonable for shooting at shotguns. And again, you don't want to shoot, even with birdshot, you don't want to shoot any closer to about 7 yards because you get that splatter back on you. Of course, you always want to wear eye protection and ear protection when shooting. The wraparound style eye protection, make sure you have that. Especially if you're doing shotgun shooting and you're shooting at steel, because that stuff will come back. You'll feel a little bit of peppering. It'll go forward. It'll hit the steel. It'll come back and you'll feel a little bit. You certainly don't want to get any of that in your eye. Okay. When it comes to safety, I always look at it as what would they send a medical helicopter out as opposed to an ambulance if you were out in an area? Well, but the potential loss of life, potential loss of limb, potential loss of eyesight. Those are the three criteria in which the bird will fly. Loss of life, loss of limb, loss of eyesight. If any of those things are at risk, That's when, if you're out in the boontoolies, they would send a medical chopper out as opposed to sending a vehicle. So, with that in mind, risk of loss of eyesight, if you're not wearing shooting glasses, especially shotgunning against steel, that's a really, really dumb thing to do. So wear your glasses. Don't go eyeballs free. Anytime you shoot, you should always wear glasses. I've been hit by I don't know how many things on glasses over the years. Some people like to go out and spend $200 on a pair of shooting glasses. They're going to get dinged up. All right. When I get, I have some very, very nice shooting glasses, and I have just some run-of-the-mill shooting glasses. I have never once paid for the very, very nice shooting glasses. They've always been gifts, and I enjoy using them. And when I pull out the very expensive, nice shooting glasses, I wear those in an environment which is less likely to see damage to those glasses. When I'm in an environment where it's more likely that I'll get damage on any shooting glasses, that's when I pull out just the, you know, regular old cheapo safety type glasses that maybe have a shooting logo, a Remington on them or something. Or, you know, a buddy of mine recently gave me some that are pretty nice that say NASCAR on the, down in the corner, which they're safety glasses, which is what a shooting glass is. It's a polycarbonate lens. So I've had to throw away several pairs of shooting glasses over the years because they get dinged up, the tabs get broken, too scratched, whatever. So please, I've seen people shooting without shooting glasses because, well, you don't want to get my shooting glasses dinged up because they cost me a couple $100. All right, well, if your eyeball gets injured, it's going to cost you well more than a couple $100 and be a lot less convenient than having to go buy or order a new pair of shooting glasses. So don't be a jerk. Take care of it. Take care of your eyes. Leave them on there. Anyhow, with all of that said, I am on the hunt at a buddy's house to go look through his he's got kind of a scrap heap. There's people around here that have a lot of property at where I live. And this fellow's got probably, I don't know, I guess I would say close to 5 acres, maybe two and a half, 3 acres, I guess, recalling a former in-law's 5-acre parcel. Anyhow, it's got a nice, decent scrap heap, a couple of decent-looking pieces of metal that are in there, so I might be pulling out the blow torches and the chop saw late this afternoon when I get over there to put together a couple of pieces of steel so the shotgun training goes that much more smoothly. Of course, that's not what you'd use for hunting shotgun training, just for defensive stuff, which is, of course, the type of things that I do. Stay tuned, guys. More about what's going on around the country when we come back. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth. Calm.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Love that song. All right, guys. Here's a story that's come out of the Gun Owners of America. So it's written on, Alan Gottlieb is the president of Gun Owners of America. They're based up in the state of Washington. So we're talking about the health care bill in the Senate. Now, the House passed their version of the bill at the time where the country was in basic shock and watching all the news dealing with the shooter at Fort Hood. So the House decided, well, let's slam this bill through. Now, in the Senate, they, of all the polling they've done, not a single senator has read the entire bill, okay, which is very similar to the cap-and-trade bill that was jammed through the House in a matter of hours. So as of right now, they're trying to bring the bill to the floor of the Senate for a vote. Of course, it's getting a lot of resistance, but there's a lot of Democrats on the side of the de facto president that want to push this through. So here's what we're looking at. I'm going to read this to you. Last week, as Americans were getting ready to celebrate Thanksgiving, Obama's spin doctors were still in full combat mode, taking shots at gun owners of America. On the official White House blog, Deputy Communications Director Dan Pfeiffer denied that the health care bill would affect gun owners. After all, he writes, there is no mention of gun-related health data or anything like it anywhere in either the Senate or the House bills. Well, unlike so many in Congress, GOA attorneys have actually read the bill, something they have been doing since before Mr. Pfeiffer was born. So, how would Obamacare attack gun rights? First of all, the fact that the bills do not mention the word gun-related health data is meaningless. Those who know even a little bit about gun law understand, understand the increasing use of statutes which do not mention guns in order to regulate them nonetheless. Gun banners love to interpret the law in the most expansive ways. Within the past year, the Federal District Court for the District of Columbia used the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, to overturn Bush regulations involving guns in parks. NEPA did not purport to apply to guns. Okay, that didn't say anything at all about guns. But yet, there was an anti-gun inaction done on it. It's like the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve, when the initial bill about the Federal Reserve being created came about, it wasn't everything that the people who were starting the Federal Reserve wanted. They didn't need that. All they needed was the start. There's been over 100 separate pieces of legislation since then to get them long ago where they wanted to be. They just needed something to start with. It's like if you're going to build a house, you know, you don't need to get all the materials right now. The first thing you need to get is the permit. Once you get the permit, then you can start scavenging to finish building this thing up. All right? So that's what they're looking for right now. It's the permit, the foundation to start building. Increasingly, zoning ordinances are being used to put gun ranges and gun dealers out of business. These ordinances do not mention guns. 35 jurisdictions have brought lawsuits to try to put gun manufacturers out of business, arguing negligence, product defect, and nuisance laws, which were not previously thought to apply to guns. And, over the last decade, veterans suffered from PTSD have been denied the right to purchase a gun. This was not supposed to have happened when the Brady Law was enacted in 94, but that did not keep Clinton's Department of Veterans Affairs from using the law to disarm thousands upon thousands of veterans without any due process. So, the government, they are self-regulating. So if they don't want millions of people, hundreds of thousands at minimum, hundreds of thousands of people who are trained to use guns to be able to not ever own a gun, all they have to do is every single person that is leaving the armed forces, okay, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, U.S. Coast Guard, all they would have to do is every single one of them on their eval is put that they have post-traumatic stress disorder of some kind. That's all they'd have to do. Then these people who are trained with firearms, at least to one level or another, would never be allowed to own a gun themselves. Well, how good is that for the government and the whole scheme of regulating us into being citizens, from citizens, pardon me, to subjects? Well, it's pretty easy. Everybody that leaves is going to just get a blanket stamp PTSD. Everybody that leaves that has used a gun or held a gun in their line of work, stamp them with PTSD, and they can never buy another gun. That's all they have to do. Right now, that's all they have to do. Shall not be infringed. My ass, it has been infringed. It's being infringed, and it is further being infringed upon. This is the sort of thing which is going to push, the federal government is going to push the citizens of the United States to revolt. And the federal government is the one who's actually enacting this game plan. And something tells me that they know that they're doing that. Continuing, Obamacare gives tremendous authority to anti-gun bureaucrats, turning to what is written in the health care bill, section 1104, would give the Secretary of Health and Human Services, currently an Annie Gunner by the name of Kathleen Sebelius, broad authority to promulgate rules about Obamacare, and they would essentially become regulatory law. For example, the bill requires health care plans to certify in writing, quote, that the data and information systems demonstrate to the secretary that the plan conducts the electronic transactions in a manner that fully complies with the regulations of the secretary. That's section 1104B2. Okay? Paragraph B, section 2. What healthcare gun data do we fear would be required to be submitted under these rules? Increasingly, protocols are requiring that kids and adults be asked by physicians about loaded firearms in the household. A keyword search by BATFE of a federal database created by section 13001 of the stimulus bill, but enforced by the Senate version of Obamacare, could produce something pretty close to a national gun registry. Okay, veterans have already been disarmed without due process because of that whole thing with the Veterans Affairs saying PTSD, bam. Yeah, you can't have a gun. So this is what Obamacare's, what we're really looking at. As a matter of fact, let me read you a little bit more about this whole thing with the veterans. Between 115 and 150,000 veterans have had their gun rights permanently taken away from them because the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has appointed a financial guardian for them while they receive counseling for common illnesses such as post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. And all of this with no due process nor trial in the court. Under BATFE regulations issued during the Clinton administration, a diagnosis by a psychiatrist in connection with a government program, such as the education of all handicapped children, Medicare, Medicaid, etc., is sufficient to declare a person a prohibited person under 18 U.S. Code 922 G4, prohibited from owning a gun. Hence, BATFE could similarly take the position that finding an Alzheimer's, PTSD, or ADHD patient could result in the loss of their gun rights. And under the Senate Obamacare bill, this information could be obtained by ATF with nothing more than a keyword search of a newly created database. Do their search, that goes into the database, bam, all automated, your rights gone, you don't even know about it. Incidentally, federal privacy protections do not apply to law enforcement agency like ATF. How about higher insurance premiums due to owning a gun by throwing in something along the lines of, well, it's a national health care issue? White House spokesman Dan Pfeiffer also writes, nothing in the Senate health reform bill would lead to higher premiums for gun owners. Section 2717 specifically lists what types of programs would be involved, such as smoking cessations, physical fitness, nutrition, heart disease prevention. Well, as any lawyer will let you know, that list in section 2717 is inclusive, but is not exclusive. So they can always add to it. So, this bill sucks. Call, write, email, write it on a rock and throw it at your senator, whatever, to let them know, not in our day and age. Absolutely not. If this thing passes this month, it's going to be coal in everybody's healthcare stocking. That's just the way it is. This is ridiculous that we are getting railroaded yet this much further. All right. We are now going to go to the city of Atlanta. We have increasingly these goofy mayors that are trying to enact gun control. We know about Mayor Nichols, the outgoing mayor of Seattle. He was beaten in the primary. He's a lame duck. He signed an executive order, an illegal executive order, banning guns in certain places, city parks, things such as that, within the city of Seattle. Even though the state's attorney general said, you can't do that. We have a state preemption law. First of all, you'd have to pass a measure through the city council. You cannot do it through an executive order. And even if you did do it through the city council, it wouldn't be legal because we have a state preemption law. Well, he did an executive order anyhow. One guy with a gun went down and challenged it. They told him, you have to leave. Now he has the ability to take it to court to challenge it, which is exactly what is going on. So, what we have now is, basically, although there's an inevitable recount in the future, it's now pretty clear that State Senator Kasim Reed is Atlanta's mayor-elect. Now, what does this mean for the right to keep and bear arms in Atlanta? Well, as an initial matter, it must be remembered that Atlanta is Georgia's largest city and commercial hub. The city therefore carries a lot of influence with the General Assembly at the state level and its policies. Atlanta has lobbied against the right to keep and bear arms in the past when House Bill 89 decriminalized the carry of weapons on MARTA, which was being debated. And MARTA was some bill which, I'm going to have to see if I can find what the MARTA acronym stands for. Atlanta was more successful in a fight in court over the right to keep and bear arms in the Atlanta airport, something that's legal in 40 other states. They wanted to ban all guns from airport property, period. A gun-free zone, if you will. Atlanta also fought the repeal of its gun ban on firearms in city parks. Even though the ban was plainly illegal under the state preemption law, unfortunately, the election of Kasim Reed probably indicates that Atlanta will continue steering in the same anti-gun course in the future. Kasim Reed is currently state senator. His voting record is available. It's a public information, and it shows that he voted against every single bill that would put into effect your right to keep and bear arms. Anti-gun every step of the way. And it's interesting because a number of those bills are actually were pro trying to get minorities more involved in being able to shoot. This guy's a black man. So it goes back to the whole thing, yeah, keep the guns out of the hands of the minorities. And even the minorities in charge recognize this. That's what they want to do. So if that's not a racist form of a jackbooted thug, I don't know what is. So if you're in Atlanta or in the Atlanta area, that's what you're looking at. To have these mayors go, it really began with this just pathetic, tiny, tiny, tiny little excuse for a man named Michael Bloomberg in New York City that he wanted to take this gun control thing from a mayor's office on a regional and even a national basis. Such a tiny little worm of an excuse for a human being. And this guy has now gotten other mayors to overstep their executive bounds. Okay. Well, once you leave the limits of the city, you have no authority as a mayor. None. And those of you who want to enact things like Greg Nickels in Seattle, where you want to enact some sort of executive order against guns, that too is illegal. And you're showing your ignorance and your ass that you think you can get away with this. You know what? This is what I want. So I, as a single person, just one individual person, can write something up and sign it, and now your rights are restricted. You don't seem to understand that the Second Amendment, the hidden little secret of the Second Amendment, gives we the people the right to organize together and shoot at you, the government, when you decide to restrict our rights or try to take more control than what is authorized to you within the Constitution. We just haven't stood up to do that. And quite honestly, the government at many, many angles, even with these mayor's offices, certainly at some state levels, certainly at the federal level, are really pushing to have this done. You probably don't realize that there is a very good portion of the American public that has a line in the sand that you are edging towards. You're pushing towards all you, and that line in the sand is way beyond where the government should be anyhow. It should have been way, way, way back up yonder. You push through the one that you shouldn't have gone through, now approaching the very last holds barred line in the sand. And I swear, if the government keeps going the way it is, you know, from cities, states, all the way up into the federal government, if they keep going the way they are about restricting our rights, especially our gun rights, but our rights all around, I got to tell you, it's going to get ugly. And the government's going to get exactly what they are pushing towards. They're creating this environment through their own actions. Stay tuned, guys. More to come. I'll be right back. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not where you belong.
I have to read you a funny email I just got. A friend of mine says, Bill, I need your help. The subject line was help. A guy that we know is going to be in town in about a week. He says, I owe him a few bucks, and he told me that I could just buy him a couple of beers. And we'd call it even. As you know, I'm not really a beer guy. I need to recruit you to go have a couple of beers with him for me. Are you up to it? By the way, I'm buying. I'll have some of my fruity drinks. Will I need to twist your arm? I think I'll be able to help my buddy out. He's buying. The three of us are going out for beer. Yeah, Scott, I'm there for you. Brother, I mean, you know, stand tall. I'm a friend. What are friends for? I'm there. Okay, we read a story last week about a 10-year-old girl that was tased by a cop, by a deputy, because she was acting out. Well, the same thing happened to a 10-year-old boy in Colorado who was having a temper tantrum, and the cops decided to tase him. 50,000 volts. To a kid that weighs probably, what, 60 pounds? 75 pounds, maybe? You got to be kidding me. And, of course, we followed all our policies and procedures, which, whenever a police official utters some variations on that phrase, we can safely assume that they're defending an act of potentially lethal violence by one of their subordinates that normal people would regard as excessive and potentially criminal and be arrested and go to jail for. Okay, so that's what Captain Jeff Teschner, head of patrol for the Pueblo County Sheriff's Department in Pueblo County, Colorado, said after his deputies tased a 10-year-old boy. Now, let me give you my thoughts on this. If I were ever to witness anybody, be it a cop or non-cop, tase a child that was having a tantrum, literally tase them, I would beat that person bloody black and blue. Or if nothing else, get the taser from them and tase them with it a couple of times. Folks, there's a lot of things I don't see excuses for. Tasing a child when you are an adult, especially when you're a law enforcement officer, you've got a whole belt full of crap on you. You've got pepper spray. You've got your taser. You've got all these things that you should not be amping up to a child that's having a temper tantrum. I could maybe see if it's bad, starting to get violent, pepper spray. But not a taser. That just doesn't sit with me. That I can't understand that. Another form of tyranny, guys. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, and Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thanks for spending your morning week with me. Coming up next, the Global Research Hour. Stay tuned.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will Your Freedoms? The 2-Way Radio Show. 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.